What is good, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Gold Standard Podcast. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera alongside Levin Black. It is a Wednesday. It is July 29th. We have training camp in full swing. Kyle Shanahan called a bunch of reporters into his office yesterday to explain what happened about his accident. We're going to get to that eventually, Levin. But also, Vita Vea is on the trade block. It is so good to be back in football season again.
Before we get to actual football, do you remember that song, You're So Vain?
Yeah, you probably think this song is about you.
Yeah. Can you lean back real quick for the camera?
Oh, I can, baby.
Oh, look at that. The dude is wearing himself on his own shirt.
That's
like a T.O. type of move.
I love me some me. What can I tell you? I have the What Is Good shirt on that's available in the merch store right now. Feel free to go and check it out. Goldstandard.dashery.com is the merch store. Hey, you know, I got to push the merch.
Yeah, you see how I gave you a little assist there in pushing the merch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks. It's about time you start doing your job. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my job is not to sell T-shirts. My job is to make your network actually sound smart, despite you being on it 4 days a week.
Oh, let's have the jokes today. We will get to the Kyle Shanahan stuff. It is serious. It is significant. And there's a lot to react to there. But I feel like because of all the Shanahan stuff, we've kind of been given short shrift to the football side of things. So we're going to start with that today. Vita Vea is potentially out there. Also, Clay Kubiak just spoke to the media and said a couple interesting things. We can talk about that as well. But just broadly, Levin, great defensive tackle on the market. Do you want John Lynch to pick up the phone and call Tampa Bay?
Pick up the phone and call? Yeah, absolutely. I think you always should for a player of that caliber. I'm not necessarily convinced that there is any trade possible here because I feel like the Bucs, for them to be willing to trade him, the capital that they would have to get back, no team is coming with. I think this is a very clear situation where the guy is so much more valuable to the team he's on than what teams are going to be willing to offer that team. He is 31. He wants a new contract. That new contract is probably going to be pushing. I've seen projections, and I think the projections are a little outdated because the DT market changed this offseason. And I think that he's going to probably be somewhere around $28 million, which would make him like the fourth highest paid. So for a 31-year-old doing that and giving up draft capital, I don't know that I see a team giving up anything of great value.
For anyone that doesn't know, just quickly, Vita Vea, defensive tackle, like you said, one of two players with 60 or more pressures from the nose tackle spot over the last three seasons. The other was Dexter Lawrence, who just got traded to Cincinnati this offseason and got a $28 million contract. Vea has a 65.6% double team rate. That was ninth highest among all players in the NFL. He's had 11.5 sacks over the last 2 years. He did win a Super Bowl, of course, and he is from California, so he has some California roots. That's Vita Vea. A lot of times, like, we're no stranger to this. Trade demands are just a negotiation tactic. So who knows how serious this is, but he also got the dreaded tweaked something, according to Todd Bowles, and is not practicing. That is, could be a negotiation tactic as well, but it is something that guys do when they potentially are being held out if a trade is going to work out. Buccaneers got some problems. They need to work out a contract with Baker Mayfield. They haven't worked one out with Vita Vea. They got some stuff going on in Tampa Bay. But if you are John Lynch, man, I would honestly, I know this is, people are going to go nuts. I'd give up a first round pick for him. I would.
No way in hell.
I don't know that you necessarily have to, but
that's
what I'm
saying. I wouldn't. You don't have to come anywhere close to that.
But what I'm saying, I would rather give up one pick and have it be a first round pick than multiple picks, especially because everyone keeps talking about, oh, this draft class is so amazing. It's so good. No one's going to want to give up picks. I'll give up a pick. I'll give up a first round pick. If the draft class is that good, I'm not going to sweat that. I don't want to give up multiple picks. That is what's something that I would like to avoid if I were the 49ers. And by the way, not everybody picked in this draft is going to be a Hall of Famer. I don't care how good the draft class is too. I just think the Niners should go all in Why not make the... Imagine having Vita Vea and Oso Odighizuwa up the middle of this defense. Then that puts less pressure on Alfred Collins coming off a shoulder surgery, less pressure on C.J. West. Then you have Bosa and Mikal on the outside with Romello High. Now we're cooking.
I don't see a trade scenario that you don't give up one of those guys. Tampa wants somebody this year. You know, if they still think they can contend. So to me, I think the negotiations will almost assuredly include Alfred Collins. That's their, okay, here's a second round pick. He flashed a little bit as a rookie, but there were also some bad things. But he's a recent second round pick. And then I think you add on something like a third and a fifth or just a second. And that's the potential deal I see. Alfred Collins in like a second, I think is what the most the Niners should offer. I would not be offering a first round pick.
See, I would rather keep Alfred Collins and give up the first round pick. Now, I don't know if Tampa Bay may say we need to get a player back. I have no idea.
There's no point. You have OC and you have Vita Vea. There's no point of keeping Alfred Collins at that point. Yes, you have depth. Yes, injuries happen. But at that point, is Alfred Collins going to be happy? No, probably not, because he's sitting there going, how the heck do I ever earn a second contract when I'm a backup now?
Alfred Collins' happiness is far down on my list of priorities.
No, but I'm saying, like, and you got Tampa that's going to say, we're not trading him for just a draft pick because they don't have a replacement. It's too late to find one.
Well, if Tampa demands a player, that changes everything. But if I were the 49ers, I would not cling to this first-round pick. The Niners gave up a first-round pick this year and may have still ended up with a really good player in Daizon Stribling. Who knows? I would try to keep as many good defensive linemen in the building as possible. And here's another side of this, and I know we're going to get to most of the Shanahan stuff later, but if there is a chance, and there definitely is, that he is not really 100% for a lot of the year and maybe can't provide the same level of greatness on the offensive side of the ball, why not load up on your defense and try to go all in and say, Raheem Morris, you were basically going to be running your own shop anyway there. Let's lean on the defense a little bit this year and see how far we can go with this thing. I don't know if that's entering into their thinking at all because there's so much unknown with the Kyle health situation, but it would be something to consider in my opinion.
No, I don't think, I mean, that reeks of desperation and desperation that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Hey, we lost our guy that runs the entire offense because he can't necessarily be on the sideline. Like, I think there's a chance that Kyle starts out in the booth and that Raheem Morris is the head coach on the sideline.
Interesting.
Because that would take a lot of the stress off of him. He's not on the sideline. He's not dealing with quite as much of the stimulus if he's up in the booth. You know, he's not hearing the crowd quite as poorly because he's inside a booth. I think that's a possibility here to start out where he's essentially the offensive coordinator. Might run the practices as the head coach, but on game day, it's more of Raheem Morris. That's a possibility. And I think if you're at the point where you don't know that Kyle Shanahan is going to be able to truly be hands-on with the offense like he always has been, you're not going to solve that by going out and getting another defensive player. You know, if that's the scenario where they're working with a Kyle Shanahan that is not going to oversee the offense on game days, like play calling and things like that, then you don't have a contending team because there's not somebody else in the building that can pick up that slack.
Well, there is no one in the building that can do what Kyle does. That idea of coaching in the booth, let's put a pin in that. I want to get back to that. That's really interesting that I hadn't thought of that. Niner Faithful 8080 says, first round pick for a 31-year-old, though. I thought we wanted to go younger, or is Vita worth it? You don't have to have a 25-year-old at every position. I would, again, if a first round pick allows me to keep Alfred Collins and my other defensive linemen, I would do it. I would absolutely do it. I don't care that Vita Vea is 31. And I know you're going to have to pay him, honestly. What I would say to Vita Vea, and he may not want to do this, but if I'm the Niners, maybe I go the route that Cincinnati went, which is a weird sentence to say out loud. They gave Dexter Lawrence a 1-year deal worth $28 million. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Niners have $70 million in cap room this season, but they're not in as good a shape for the cap next year. Well, if Dexter or if Vita Vea is not on your cap next year, great. You know, that doesn't, you're not affecting that. Doesn't make it any more difficult for you financially for the next year. I know it's a first round pick. I get all of that. But you can't, on one hand, ding the 49ers for how much they suck at drafting, and on the second hand, say, we can't ever give up a first round pick. Like, you know, you got to decide which bucket you're in.
And see, I don't think Vita Vea can compare to Dexter Lawrence situation because of the age difference.
True.
Vita Vea is not going to do a one-year deal. He knows this is his last chance to cash in. He's looking to get a 3 or 4 year deal that takes him through potentially into retirement. Like, this is his last chance to cash in, because after this contract, he's going to be looking at those 1 year kind of mercenary type of deals if he's still playing. I mean, he is a nose tackle, so the prospects of playing past 35 are not as good as other positions. But I also think a lot of this honestly comes down to what Raheem Morris wants to do. How much 3-4 is he really looking to run? If it's a lot, then yeah, I think you really go for this. If it's not a lot, because maybe the linebacker core can't support 4 linebackers, then I don't think this trade makes sense. So this trade only makes sense, I think, if you're going to run 3-4 more than you're going to run 4-3 or 5-2 or, you know, something other than that. So I think a lot of this just depends on where Raheem Morris is and what he's wanting to do.
Which is a whole kind of separate offshoot of a topic, because apparently he's been doing all sorts of stuff in training camp so far. Yes, please. Thank you very much, Raheem Morris, to the point where Trent Williams was like, I don't like this. He's like, normally you know what you're getting every time. There's 4 down linemen and we run the same defense every time. That is not the case to this point in training camp. I would hope that John Lynch would pick up the phone. I don't know what it was going to take. What do you think they should give up for Vita Vea? Let me know. Let us know. Leave a comment in the chat. Would you be willing to give up the first round pick, or do you want no part of that? Like Levin seems to think I'm crazy, which makes me believe it's a good idea.
I mean, I literally spent time looking at like Tampa Bay Reddit and things like that. And even their own fans are expecting a 2nd and a 5th at the highest. So right. Like a first round pick, there is a reason why, they did not give up a 2027 first round pick. I'm drawing a blank right now on the team. They gave up a 2028 first round pick instead of 2027. Might've been the Dexter. Yeah, it was the Dexter Lawrence trade. They gave up a 2028 because teams are so high in the 2027 draft, which honestly, I find that type of stuff laughable. That's the type of stuff that I think is NFL teams trying to be too smart and just frankly being stupid. Oh, 2027 draft is going to be so great. We can't trade those draft picks. I value them more than 2028. Every single year, you can draft somebody in the 4th round that's going to be a Pro Bowler. Like, just because you think the draft is going to be better doesn't mean it actually ends up proving out to be true. How many times have we heard, oh, this draft is going to be great, and then 2 years later we go, wow, that was totally wrong. I mean, you look at, like, a lot of, like, the quarterback drafts. That's the most often talked about. Ooh, this is a really big quarterback draft. And most of the time, the big quarterback drafts have ended up turning out terribly. Look at the Trey Lance year. Trevor Lawrence is the best one. He was drafted 1st overall, and he's not really a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. He's borderline, but that's the best one. You know, the Rosen year, same thing. Like, most of them fizzled out.
So, yeah, I agree. It's hard to predict this stuff. But that's why, again, I'm okay giving up a first. And I agree with you that a first would be high. But again, if it allows me to give up only one pick and no players, that's why I would be willing to do it. Now, if they were like, you got to give up a first plus guy, that, no, then I'm not doing that. But I would rather have more picks in a what is expected to be a deeper draft and approach it that way. Who knows? And maybe the fact that Vita Vea wants a new deal just totally eliminates the 49ers from contention. That's entirely possible too. But man, I just have, you know, dreams of a defensive line that is just wrecking plays, just wrecking them over. who's going to touch Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw if you have Vita Vea and Osa Odighizuwa up front? Like, who's touching them?
Probably nobody. I mean, you got right. Nick Bosa, too. Like, essentially, if you get Vita Vea, you're adding a second guy that demands a double team more often than not. Nick Bosa gets double teamed a ton, and Vita Vea gets double teamed a ton. So I don't know what teams do at that point. They have to match up with them one-on-one, and you're not going to win that very often if you're matching up with them one-on-one. But I will say I would rather do Alfred Collins in a second than the first-round pick.
I wouldn't be super upset if it had to. Here's the question for me, I guess. If it had to include a player and you had to include Alfred Collins and that was the only way to get the deal done, would I be willing to do it? Yes, I guess I would, because generally I'm a proven player guy over a young player guy most of the time, and Vita Vea is certainly proven. Plus, also the fact that he's a Super Bowl champion. How many Super Bowl champions do the 49ers have on this roster? Do they have another one?
Yeah, his teammate.
Or oh, yeah, teammate. That's true. Mike, I should have thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I'm here.
Wow, congrats. The one time you got one over on me.
No, but like I look at Alfred Collins, like Alfred Collins should not be somebody like, oh, we really don't want to include him, so you're going to have to convince us. Because let's be honest, Alfred Collins' value is less now than it was this time last year. He's coming off of surgery, and while he had a few plays where he flashed and you saw the potential, his overall rookie year was pretty bad. He's one of the worst rated defensive tackles of last year.
That's what Michelle would say. I know she would be on the Vita Vea train. Corey Coleman, thank you for the super chat, says, Niners are in win now mode. You can't serve two masters. Trying to also farm for the future. This move would make the Niners real. Go Hawks. Ooh, that took a turn at the end there. I was not expecting that to go the way that it went. Thank you again, Corey, for the super chat. I agree. You are in win now mode. You know, Kittle, obviously, who knows his situation? Everybody's talked endlessly about all the veterans on the offense for this team. I would do it. I hope John Lynch does it. I would love to see the kind of pressure up front from the defensive line. I mean, what if he mentioned the Hawks, right? What made Seattle so good? It was that they could keep four linemen in. They could play nickel all the time, never had to adjust, and they could still stop the run. Well, if you have Bosa, Michael, Osa, and Vita Vea, guess what? You can stop the run. You can rush the passer just with those four guys. That gives you so much more flexibility on defense to do different things and not be dictated to by the offense. It's exactly what makes the Seahawks great. I would love to see what that would look like in San Francisco.
I mean, let's look at how it changes things. If the Niners run three defensive linemen, they don't have a true nose tackle on the roster. Alfred Collins is not a true nose tackle. So it's a mediocre three linemen. A four linemen, I would say they're probably top 10 with Michael back. But they're not upper echelon elite. Five linemen front, which Morris is supposedly going to run quite a bit. I would say, again, they're probably borderline top 10 going five deep. If you add Vita Vea, I think they become the best 3-4 lineup, because you can go Vita Vea in the center, best nose tackle in the league. Nick Bosa on one side, who would be a phenomenal 3-4 defensive end, because he is kind of a defensive tackle, but still an edge rusher. And then you can have Osa or Michael Williams, both of which would be good 3-4 defensive end options. When you go to the four down linemen, I think you elevate the four down linemen up into the top five, maybe the top three with Vita Vea. And if you go the five linemen front, I think they're again the best. So they go from like borderline top 10 in those three things to being either the best or top five. So I think it does give you a lot more flexibility on what you can run, and it gives you a whole different level up front. Better not be injury news with your reactions over there.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
It's injury news, and it is the worst injury. Well, not the worst, but it is injury news that nobody wanted to see. It is the injury news that...
Is it Mikal Williams?
It's Ricky Pearsall. Ricky Pearsall is dealing with knee swelling related to the PCL injury he suffered last year. Team says, quote, all options are being explored, and there is some concern.
So what the hell did they do this offseason? Has he not been working out? I guarantee he's been working out, so has it been bothering him and he kept his mouth shut?
I mean, what is going on? what? Come on, how is this possible? They had a jog through. They changed the training schedule this year, so they never had three practices in a row because they're trying to keep people fresh. They spent $9 million, you know, fixing up the hydro facilities. They hired extra people. I mean, Ricky Pearsall couldn't make it. They didn't even put the pads on yet.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, he has to be training, you know, before training camp started, going hard, doing sprints, you know, taking his cuts and his routes. And so he went all off season without it bothering him. And now suddenly it's bothering him when they're doing light practices. I don't buy it. And if it was bothering him before now, why the hell didn't you say something so that maybe he gets microscopic knee surgery to help drain liquid or whatever? Like, it just, that to me does not make sense. He's either been bothered by it and not saying anything, or honestly, I don't see another, like, how, because as you said, they're not doing hard practices right now.
And Bat Barrow says the team's looking at all options, including surgery. It is the same knee. It could be related to the PCL last year. Here is the thing, okay? If he needed knee surgery, he had all off season to get knee surgery. What? And I feel like this is a thing with the 49ers training staff where, just like Brock Purdy, right? Didn't get the surgery. Then he came back and then he wasn't ready and he had to go out for weeks after that. If you need surgery, get surgery. What is with this delay of all this stuff? And now, who knows? We don't know. Ricky, we don't know. We haven't heard anything definitive. But I mean, this is unbelievable. It is unbelievable that this guy, who never missed a game in 5 years of college, and he gets to the 49ers, and he is battling the same knee issue over and over and over again.
Yeah, it just, if this ends up being serious, then yeah, I think you're out on Ricky Pearsall. At that point, you can't trust him. You go, all right, if he ends up being healthy and he adds another option to us, cool, but we're not trusting that. Like, I think if this ends up being serious, put it this way, I think wide receiver jumps to the top of the list for the first round pick next year.
And it might have been that way anyway if they didn't want to, you know, continue his contract situation. And unfortunately, that's not the only injury news, Levin. Jordan James fractured a rib on Monday. Fractured a rib. No pads. No. How? Malik Mustafa has a hamstring as well. So we got injuries. We are in mid-season form when it comes to the 49ers with injuries. Now, for what it's worth, both Jordan James and Kalen Black have reportedly looked good. Well, here's your opportunity, Kalen Black. Come on down. If Jordan James is going to be out for any extended period of time, this is your opportunity to not only become the backup to Christian McCaffrey, but also to shut up a lot of people who crushed the 49ers for drafting you when they did. Just absolutely killed him. It was probably the pick that was criticized more than any other in the entire draft, except for maybe some Jaguars picks. This is your chance, Kalen Black. Step up, because the time is now.
One, just first part, running backs looking good before pads are on, I don't care whatsoever. Pads aren't on, running backs, of course they look good. Oh, look, this amazing athlete looks good when he can't be touched. Cool. but I had hoped the Kyle Shanahan stuff was kind of like an exercise the demon. Okay, the coach got hurt, so now the team can finally have a healthy season. Early returns do not seem to be the case. Obviously, all three of these could end up not affecting the regular season. Not very likely. It's probably looking at a Ricky Pearsall season similar to last year, where it's a non-stop issue. he comes back, then goes back out, then comes back, then goes back out type of thing. But the rib fracture, that should be healed by regular season. The hamstring, unless it's a crazy hamstring injury, he should be fine by the middle of preseason to get reps and get back up to speed. I will say it's interesting that he's been supposedly splitting reps with Siegel, and it's been Jair Brown that's the locked-in starter. So that would potentially put the point of, even if Malik Mustafa makes it back, say, for week two of preseason, does he have a chance of actually being a starter at that point?
Well, I mean, who knows? We were saying the same thing about Jacob Cowing, right? Hurt his hamstring on the first day of training camp. Oh, he'll be back. Guess what? We never saw him. It killed his whole season. Now, he re-injured it multiple times since then, so that would be the difference. But Malik Mustafa, who knows? He was hurt last year coming off the knee. Now he's hurt this year so far. We'll see how serious it is. Jordan James fractured a rib, and Ricky Pearsall. I mean, as soon as he ramped it up, he knee swelling, he's got to throttle down again.
Ramped what up?
Well,
has not been like the training that he was doing to get ready for the season had to be more strenuous than what they've done in the early part of training camp.
Mayoko again tweeted, the Niners have concern about Pearsall's condition. The knee plagued him for a long period of time last season. Yeah, he probably should have had freaking surgery. Like, amazing. If you injure a part of your body playing football and you don't have surgery, that part of you that's injured remains injured. Like, did you expect it to magically heal on its own? Some injuries require surgical intervention. Is Dustin Perry not aware of this, man? Like, we haven't even put on the pads yet, and we're already up the creek with injury. This is unbelievable.
Shocker. The wide receiver room is light on people, because you also have Kirk that is banged up, put it that way.
Christian Kirk injured, Ricky Pearsall injured. Put Daizon Stribling in bubble wrap, man. And guess what? Jacob Cowing and Jordan Watkins, you just got a new lease on life. You may have life yet. I thought one of you was going to get cut. You may both make the team now.
Yeah, it all depends. We'll probably know something in the next week. I'm guessing this will be something that it'll be one of those things where nobody can get a straight answer. And I think all options are on the table. It's potential that he returns to practice in the second part of training camp. Or it's potential, he's going on IR and he's done. Like everything in between.
Michelle just texted me, Ricky Pearsall, just cut off your knee and start over. Oh, God. It's unbelievable. Maybe this opens the door for Brandon Ayuk to walk back in, huh? How about that?
I'm more worried about a different former 49er walking in.
Deebo Samuel.
Yeah.
I just can't believe we haven't even put the pads on. We haven't even put the pads on, and the guy's knee.
Like so I said, at this point, it's I'm never counting on Ricky Pearsall again. If he's healthy, great, but I'm not counting on it. That's what the team approach should be at this point. And it's certain this is a player, at this, even if this ends up being just a scare, unless he plays all 17 games, I think maybe then that would change the opinion. But this popping up again means it's not a player I give a second contract to.
You know, I was worried when I saw him doing the training video and he had the thing on his knee. You know, on that knee, and people were like, it's a compression sock, whatever. I'm like, yeah, but he doesn't have one on the other knee. And that's the knee he had problems on. So he obviously felt some desire to wear it for some reason. And I remember Ricky talking about his injury last year. Instability was the word that he used. Well, things just don't magically become stable again. You have to go in and make them stable with surgery. That's how things restabilize in the knee. It's frustrating. As Johnny Dell says, three practices. Alfred Collins still on PUP. Pearsall, Kirk, Mustafa, James, Grayson Halton, Vidarian Lowe. I mean, think about that. No pads, and that's, put Collins out of it because he was coming off of surgery. Pearsall, Kirk, Mustafa, James, Halton, Lowe. That's six dudes before you even put pads on that are hurt.
Yeah, it is what it is. The good news is that the Niners are better equipped to deal without having Ricky Pearsall this year than they were last year.
Yes, that is true. With Mike Evans there, and hopefully, but then you're also putting a lot on Stribling too. He's got to shoulder a lot of this, and you're kind of counting on him. He's unproven.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm not saying I count on Stribling, but Evans is a class that they didn't have last year. It was Ricky Pearsall and pray and hope, because Jennings is a number three receiver, and this offseason proved that with no team willing to pay him. It's manageable, put it that way. Especially if Stribling ends up being a really good rookie, then I don't know that this really changes a whole heck of a lot for the 49ers. But again, as you said, that's hinging a lot on a rookie wide receiver, which is one of the more difficult positions to come in and be great at.
Now, we have seen rookie wide receivers make more of an impact as rookies recently than they used to in the past. It used to be pretty rare. Usually it would take a couple years, but that has kind of changed in the past, I would say.
Not in this offense.
Well, that's fair. You know, Viking Samurai says you drafted Stribling high for a reason. Let him play.
Maybe that's why they decided wide receiver had to be the first pick, because they knew Pearsall was a question mark.
And as Johnny Dell says, DeMarcus Robinson now could be a lock for the team as probably. Well.
Because they need that. That's, you know, some kind. You're not going to go in with Evans, Kirk, Stribling, Watkins, and Cowing as your five wide receiver. There's too much inexperience there.
I cannot believe that we're here this fast. I knew the 49ers would have injuries. Teams have injuries every year, of course. I said this last year, and it has remained true. This team is incapable of doing any football activities without people getting hurt. And for people that say Kyle runs them too hard, he's not even there, right? You can't even say it's a Kyle Shanahan thing. They can't do anything football-related without injury. Jordan James broke a rib. There's no pads on. What?
That one, I wonder if more details will come out where it happened away. Or it could be something like, weightlifting. Yeah. I don't know how you hurt a rib when it's no contact.
I have no idea. And I think, yeah, I think if supposedly all options are on the board with Pearsall, if he's out, maybe Debo does come back. Who knows? Who knows at this point? I think everything's on the table.
Can the defense just stay healthy? You know, I'll sacrifice some of the offense. Just, I don't want last year where both sides are just depleted. Because, I mean, last year was the wide receiver room completely depleted and the defense depleted on all levels.
Doubly 73 says substation breaking bones now. That's well done. Danny Muzzy 3906. Thanks for the super chat. Vita Vea is a Bay Area native like myself. Let him play for his hometown team. He grew up down the street from Levi's. That doesn't mean as much to me, but I know a lot of people in San Francisco do enjoy that stuff. Joseph Ernberg says, get Ricky off this damn team. Bum. Ernberg also says, eager to see Seattle spank the 49ers over. Go Niners. See, we've had those two opposite tweets. We had the one guy saying the Niners are in win now mode and ending it with go Hawks. And now Joseph Ernberg says he's eager to see Seattle spank the 49ers and then ends it with go Niners.
Yeah, I'm confused by that. You're eager to see the team you root for get spanked by their rival? That doesn't compute. You may think Seattle's going to spank them. That's not something you can really argue against right now. But to be eager to see it, yet you're a fan of the team that's going to get spanked, that's weird.
This is such a downer, man. I was so excited to be Ricky. It's my fault, man. It's my fault. I was excited to see him. When I went out with Kay Adams the other day, she said, give me somebody you're super excited about. I was like, oh, Ricky Pearsall, he's going to do it. Maybe he just never will.
Can you like not get on anybody's bandwagon and become their cheerleader again, please?
I guess I'm just going to have to just criticize everybody and downplay everybody. And I've been blasting Debo Samuel, so maybe if he signs with the team, he'll end up looking like 2021 Debo. Who knows?
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
All right, let's get into the Kyle Shanahan side of this, which until 20 minutes ago was the biggest story for the 49ers, but we're moving right along to other injury stuff with Kyle Shanahan. For anyone that doesn't know, he called a lot of reporters into his office yesterday, and he wanted to set the record straight about his accident and what happened, because there was some discrepancies, let's just say. I used this graphic yesterday, but I'll throw it up here because I think it's a good summary. Kyle said he was at fault, that he dropped his phone and he bent over to look at it or look for it between the seats. And when he did, he crossed over the line, and that's when the accident happened. Investigators told him he was going 20 miles an hour. He claims he never lost consciousness. He is still bothered by loud sounds like music and people talking at once. He's made progress, and he expects a full recovery, but he is still dealing with a bunch of things. I have to give credit where credit is due. Grant Cohn had a tremendous video about this, talking about the meeting and what happened and how Kyle Shanahan was emotional in the meeting and crying. Apparently, Kyle cries every day as a result of this accident because all of his emotions are heightened, and he's still dealing with a lot of, I don't want to call it post-traumatic stress disorder because I don't know if he's been diagnosed with that, but he's dealing with a lot of stress from the accident. And the first part of the session was all off the record. It was about 25 minutes or so. And then the second part of the session was on the record. And that's when he explained a lot of what he's going through. But clearly, this is a significant life event for Kyle Shanahan. It is going to have significant effects. It already has had significant effects. And this is, I mean, it could have been a lot worse.
It could have been a lot worse, both for his own injuries, but if he had injured the other person, I mean, it would be criminal because he was breaking the law in what he was doing. He was using his cell phone while driving. So I think he's, in some sense, as weird as it is to say, very lucky that the other person didn't have serious injuries, because this would be a whole different situation. If they had serious injuries, mm-hmm. this would probably be a situation where he's put on leave by the league until it finishes. So he's lucky in that sense, but there is serious question on what he's going to be capable of doing this season. And as unlikely as it is, I mean, he said he expects a full recovery, but there's a lot of stimulus that happens, especially on the sideline, because of the fans, the noise, all the people talking on the headset, for instance. This might be something that permanently changes his ability to coach.
Everything is up in the air. And I said at the time that this could have major effects, and people got on me because John Lynch said they expect him to be back for week one. That's not even the biggest thing. It's not a linear recovery. Kyle Shanahan said that himself. He may be feeling great, but then he gets into a game and he feels terrible because, first of all, it's a different level of noise and there's lights and it's bright outside and all of that stuff. And Kyle even said that if he has like a stressful period or whatever, or he's studying the film and he's like grinding really hard, he can get through it usually. But then the next day he feels worse because he sort of stressed himself out the day before. Well, think about Sundays. That is high stress environment, high pressure, noise, crowds, the whole thing.
Traveling. Like, I think there's a very big question right now in Australia. Can he, if he's still having effects, he's not traveling to Australia.
And some people in the chat are thinking we should just get over that. Like, if you think this is a minor thing with Kyle Shanahan, I know you don't like to hear all this. I get it, because it's scary and it sucks. But we have to talk through these things. And that's the reality of the situation. Kyle, again, most of this comes from the video that Grant Cohn did with his dad, is the one that I watched. I recommend you go and check that out for more of the details. But Kyle said that the pain scale for like headaches is between a 1 to a 6. And most of the time he's at a 2. And what the doctors told him essentially is like, hey, your brain is a muscle. You need to kind of push it a little bit. So what Kyle does is he'll watch film or do something. And then when the pain gets to be about a level 4 is when he kind of backs off a little bit. This is not something that is, it's not the kind of thing where after a certain amount of time, you're good. It's not like Madden when it says, oh, the guy will be out 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks later, the guy's back on your team. That's not how it works. It's very fluid. It's because it's a brain injury. And to hear Kyle talk about it and what he's going through and how he doesn't have the stamina that he once had to grind through it. He was just able to watch a full practice for the first time on Monday. And I mean, watch it on film. So we don't, there is a lot up in the air, but this is very much going to be a thing that could affect him all year long and maybe beyond that.
So let me just address the aspect of this that frankly has been pissing me off the last few days. First, people wanted to say, some fans said, this isn't newsworthy. That's why Kawakami shouldn't have, you know, chased it down and done, you know, actually being a journalist, which he hasn't really been for a while now. But yeah, it's newsworthy. Your head coach might not be able to coach. That's kind of something that you, if you hear, oh, the head coach is in a serious accident. No, you don't go right out of the gate and report that. You go and you track it down. The police report existed. It's not just you go get their police report and then you report from that. Obviously, that would have been inaccurate in this case because that's part of this thing is why the heck was it reported inaccurately? Was this a case of police kind of abusing their power and trying to cover it up? Don't know yet. But that police report includes the officer who filed the report. You follow up with the office to try to talk to that officer. That is something that's quite common at all levels of journalism. I worked at a small town newspaper. Guess what the main news reporter did every single morning? Went to the police station the moment they opened and got the police reports from the previous day and went through them to see if there's anything newsworthy. Now, obviously, California is such a big area that it would have been hard. And as Kawakami correctly said, this happened in an area that he would have never guessed to go check. But once you heard, oh, hey, an accident happened, that's what the immediate reaction should be. Start calling up the police departments to try to find the police report and where it happened and start digging for the details. That's what journalism is. So the people saying that this wasn't newsworthy and nobody should have chased it down are just flat wrong. And on the Chris Sims aspect of it, let me say, I don't think Chris Sims, at least to me, he's never put himself out there as a journalist. He's, to me, he's always put himself out there as a former player who can give his opinion on things.
Right. You know what he's, I mean, not a newsbreaker. He's an analyst.
Right. Exactly. So I don't, it's not the same situation. The people that are on this beat that heard something and didn't do anything about it for 2 weeks, those people, frankly, in my opinion, and yes, I am kind of a hard line on this and always have been, those people should be fired. If you heard the coach was in an accident and your choice was, I'm not doing anything about it, then you're not doing your job. Their job is to serve their readers. And that means following anything that's newsworthy. Their job is to not go, oh, that's something personal to Kyle. I'm not going to report on it. No, the coach not being able to coach is newsworthy. That affects the team. And the people saying that we're beating a dead horse, which I've seen already in our comments just on this show, the coach can't coach. We're not beating a dead horse. It's kind of a big deal.
And I want to go back to something you said earlier, too, and I agree with all that stuff, and I've been railing on that for days, and people have been coming at me, and I don't care. It is not your job to protect Kyle Shanahan. You're not his friend, okay? You report the news as it happened. And again, you don't have to say the extent of all the injuries. The newsworthy part is that the injuries will keep him out of coaching. That's all we needed to know. And the 49ers should have put out a statement the next day also. They're not blameless either. And I want to make this point. The only reason that Kyle called everybody to his office yesterday is because Grant went and found the information. Now, the information ended up being wrong and Kyle had to clear it up. But that's not Grant's fault. That's nobody's fault who reported that information. But that's the only reason we got all this info from Kyle is because someone actually investigated and did some work to find out extra information that no one was offering. And that is the point. And it's not about me being, oh, we're entitled to the information. No, that's their job, okay? It is their job. And for people that say, oh, the 49ers don't have to say anything. They don't owe you anything. Yes, they do, okay? The only reason that the NFL is as popular as it is because fans and people are interested in it. That's it. If all of a sudden all our preferences changed and everybody that started watching the NFL, switch to soccer, guess what? Salaries in the NFL would drop. Broadcast deals in the NFL would drop. We're the only reason that the NFL is big business is because we care about it. And we care about it because we get information about it. So, yes, they do owe us an explanation. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah. And I mean, I dealt with a situation kind of like this back in college when the women's basketball coach, despite the team being the most successful it had ever been, made the NCAA tournament for the first time ever, suddenly she left the team, like took time away from the team. Now, I remember that was like a secondary beat for me. I wasn't the main beat reporter. I did other articles, kind of like a Vic DeFore for The Athletic compared to Matt Barrows. We had heard that it was a mental thing, that the stress of the job. We didn't go public with that right away because we didn't have proof. But we did go public with she had left the team and wasn't going to be coaching the team the next season. That's where, like, no, they didn't need to go public with all the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment they heard Kyle Shanahan was in an accident, that's what they should have come forward with, is that they are hearing Kyle Shanahan has been in a serious car accident, but his life is not at risk. Like that, I'm assuming they heard Kyle was in a car accident, but he's okay. You know what I mean? That's what they should have come out with. Kyle Shanahan was in an accident. We don't know the extent of it. We will be trying to find more details, but he was in a car accident. That's what they should have come out with.
Well, and I don't know what they knew. All Tim said is that he knew something was up a couple of days before. They didn't investigate. That's the thing. They didn't pull the thread. And that is the issue. They didn't even try. And Tim said, well, you know, I didn't do it because I thought it could be the health of a Kyle Shanahan family member. And if someone reported something about my family, I would be furious. Yeah, guess what, Tim? That's why you investigate.
Yeah. And if you find out, and then you don't report it if it's that.
Right. If you find out it is the health of a family member, you don't have to report it. You don't report it because that would be off limits. So he has tried to change his story and justify it six different ways from Sunday, and it's all ridiculous. And I just want to point that out. Now,
it's not that he should have reported automatically, because we don't know how much he knew and what details, but he admitted to hearing it and doing nothing about it. And to me, that's a dereliction of duty, and he should not be employed anymore, which he's been semi-retired anyways for a while.
All the reporters that got called into the office, Tim Kawakami was not one of them. Now they're saying it was one person from every publication, and David Lombardi was there from the SF Standard, whatever. Take that for what you will. You said earlier that Shanahan maybe returns to the booth this season, and I hadn't thought of that. And I think that's really interesting because he said that it seems like, at least to this point, sound is more of an issue for him than bright lights. And you're right. You could mitigate some of the sound by being in the coaching.
You could mitigate probably, I would say, like 80 or 90% of it, that you don't hear the crowd nearly as much. And he could take measures to really tune out the crowd from the booth. Can't really do that from the sideline.
Yeah.
And you eliminate all of the extra stimulus of players coming up to you and talking and having to get into, you know, the huddles on the sideline while the defense is on the field and all of those aspects that would add to the mental stress.
You could have like noise canceling Bluetooth headphones like I have when I mow the lawn. And so he could cancel the outside noise and just have the, you know, the headset coaches in his ears. That there would be a lot of mitigating factors there. That could be a very good sort of compromise. So I hadn't even considered that, but maybe that allows him to get back a little sooner. I mean, look, the best case scenario is after a couple weeks, he's feeling good and he could come back. But, you know, plan for the best or hope for the best, plan for the worst. So if you're the 49ers, you've got to have a situation where you have a backup plan. Like I've said, they have former head coach Raheem Morris on the staff. Former head coach Matt Eberflus is on the staff as well. So they have people there. Clay Kubiak has called plays before. So it seems like there's a structure there that hopefully can stand up to any kind of absence or at least put them in a position to be in a good place to withstand this a little bit. But it is a very, very significant factor for this season. It changes everything. I said it at the time. I think it changes everything about this season.
Potentially. I mean, it certainly is not, I would say it's a distraction. how much of that distraction affects the regular season. I think a lot of it comes down to how much Kyle Shanahan's able to return. You know, if he's back to normal by regular season, which I think there's a good chance he is back to normal. I mean, we're talking a month and a half from now before the regular season. So there's time here. But, I mean, you look at somebody like Nick Martin last season. That was 3 or 4 months that stretched on for him.
Right.
If that's the case for Kyle Shanahan, this happened in the middle of July. If it's even 2 months, you're into the middle of September. That's week three or so, week two or three between there. The first game being in Australia certainly doesn't help this timeline.
Nope.
I think that there's a very real chance. I wouldn't say it's likely. I think it's more likely than not he's healed enough by regular season. Because most concussions, you're healed within a couple months, enough to do stuff like this. Maybe not to go get smacked in the head playing football, healed enough, but enough to, you know, return to your job kind of thing. But there is a real chance that we deal with games where Kyle Shanahan's not coaching in any way other than game planning. Like, he's not there and he has no game day presence, put it that way. And there's an even more likely chance that he has a game day presence, but it's not as the head coach. It's as the offensive coordinator, essentially.
It's totally unknown. And I agree with what you said, too.
It's unknown to everybody, by the way. Yes. Like, Kyle Shanahan included. Nobody knows. Can't predict these things.
And also, I don't want to be totally on the negative. Like you're saying, he could heal up in 2 weeks. That absolutely could be the case also. The range of possibilities is very, very wide when it comes to this. Now, what are some things that could come out of this? Not all of them are necessarily bad. And what I mean by that is sometimes necessity is the mother of invention, right? Like, maybe Shanahan, because he doesn't have the same stamina that he used to have, maybe he streamlines some processes, or maybe he just forces himself to have to stop. You know how sometimes, like when you were studying for a test, like you just get to the point where you can't do it anymore. You're trying to cram too much in, and maybe he just has to say enough. Like, there were reports before the Super Bowl, you know, that he was freaking out before the game and all of that. Maybe this, you know, gives him a different perspective and allows him to say, like, hey, I've done as much work as I can, and now I have to just go out there and do the best I can with what the cards I have are. You know, maybe that's something that comes out of this.
Yeah. I mean, the extreme worst case scenario is he can't coach anymore. Like, he has a permanent issue, sensitivity to stuff that is game day related. Game day is all kinds of different lights. It's potentially being in the sun melting away. Like I said, you have 50 people trying to talk and be around you all at the same time when you're on the sideline. So that's the worst case scenario. I don't really want to go there, and I think it's highly doubtful that's the case.
Yes.
Yes, there is to play the multiverse angle. There is the case that Raheem Morris becomes head coach sooner rather than later.
That is the absolute worst case scenario. The best case scenario is, you know, he's back next week. And every other possibility in between is also possible, is what we're trying to stress here.
Yeah, it's going to be a thing. You know, not necessarily daily updates, but certainly weekly updates, I would say, you know, of where's Kyle at in terms of, has he improved? Can he do more now? Does he have more stamina now, or is it not improving? I think the next couple of weeks will be very telling. If he doesn't, if his role remains the same as it is currently at the end of training camp, then I would say that's a pretty good sign that, yeah, he's not going to be coaching at the start of the season, not as the head coach at least.
Of all the things we had on the bingo card, like Ricky Pearsall hurt again. Yeah, I easily would have believed that. Malik Mustafa hurt again. Yeah, I could believe that. No problem. Kyle Shanahan getting hurt and being in the concussion protocol before the start of the year was not on the bingo card. And it'd be interesting if he doesn't kind of resume a full-time role when it comes to roster cuts and playing time. you know, who's making those decisions? Does that result in some possibly different decisions? You know, look, Kyle can get frustrated, especially with young players when they screw up and make mistakes. We know this. If Kyle isn't there or and doesn't get to see some of those mistakes or whatever, does maybe that give some guys that might not have some grace, you know, a little more leeway to kind of screw up and still potentially get on the field early in the season? These are all questions that we can't answer.
Yeah, and nobody can answer. We will get an answer only if Kyle Shanahan's returning. You know what I mean? That's the nature of this thing. We will know whether or not Kyle Shanahan will be able to, say, travel to Australia until either he has returned and is normal or the week of. You know what I mean? Because the longer it stretches that he doesn't return to normal, the more likely this is something that's going to linger for a while. You know, more of like a kind of a Nick Martin concussion rather than a concussion that the person returns that very next week without symptoms. And that's the thing about head injuries is everybody is different and nobody, including the doctors, can predict it.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
Get well soon, Kyle Shanahan. But it was wild to hear the reports of how he was, you know, visibly shaken during the meeting with reporters. Grant Cohn said he gave Kyle a hug at the end of the meeting, and Kyle ended up hugging everybody that was there. Now, it's possible he was kidding. It didn't sound like he was kidding. He wasn't smiling when he said it. But clearly Kyle was upset. He cried multiple times. He said he wishes he could give a press conference, but he doesn't want to go out there and cry in front of everybody. This is a significant life event, not only for Kyle, but obviously for his wife, for his three kids. I mean, their father almost died. He had to get 40 mm-hmm. stitches in his face. I shouldn't say the craziest part. Apparently, he looks almost normal. Kyle said he had plastic surgery. He said, I had the best plastic surgeon on the planet, and he has a cut above his eye. But other than that, he doesn't look, you know, you hear 40 stitches in the face and you think he's going to look like a jigsaw puzzle. And that is not the case at all.
Yeah. And I think I will say one thing I disagreed with what you said earlier is that the Niners should have released a statement when it happened. Absolutely not. It's not their job to inform the public. It's their job once it affects coaching. And that's when they came forward with it. Once training camp started, they didn't need to they don't need to release anything unless their hand is forced. They don't have to. They didn't know at the time it happened whether or not it would actually affect anything in terms of his coaching. And if he looks normal, they probably thought, well, this is probably going to heal and he'll be fine for training camp and this is just a personal matter. From a team perspective, they don't have to go public with it right away. Once it starts affecting the team because training camp started and he can't fully coach, then yeah, they got to go public with it. And that's exactly what they did. The journalists are the ones that heard something. You know, I'm not saying they heard, oh, Kyle Shanahan was in an accident, but they could have heard something happened to Kyle Shanahan or Kyle Shanahan has a health thing going on right now or anything along those lines. Yeah, you start investigating that. You don't necessarily go public with it right away, like I said, but you start investigating it. And that's my problem. Maybe some of them did and they couldn't find out what it was. That's entirely possible. The reason why Kyle Wakami is getting all of the attention is because he admitted he did nothing with it. He didn't try to investigate it. Yeah. Maybe Barrows heard something and tried to investigate it. You know what I mean? And just couldn't find out. That's entirely possible. And if Kyle Wakami had said, oh, I heard something, but I couldn't find any info, he wouldn't be getting any criticism. It's that he said, I heard something and I didn't give a shit that he's getting criticism for it.
The journalists, to me, bear the bigger piece of blame pie in this, but I do think the team should have put something out. The same day Alden Smith died, there was a statement out about Ricky Pearsall, certainly less than 11 days after the incident happened. It doesn't matter that Alden Smith died. It doesn't make it any different. They have a history of putting out statements when things happen. This was the head coach of the football team. Again, they didn't have to put in all the details. They could have just said Kyle Shanahan was in a car accident, his non-life-threatening injuries, thanks to the, you know, emergency personnel, not unlike the statement that they did put out. But I agree. I think that they were hoping that he would be back and that they wouldn't have to say anything at all. And they could just sweep this whole thing under the rug.
The difference I would say is, yes, they could have done those, as you said, but they don't have to do that.
Is there a league rule that says they have to do it? No, but that doesn't shield them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they are not under an obligation to do it. Journalists are not under an obligation to do their freaking job. And
certainly
that's
more
the problem. They didn't, or at least Kawakami did not. We don't know what the others did. I'll say that. But the team does not have to go public with this. That it's no different than the CEO of a major company getting a DUI is not something that the company's going to come out with. It's going to be somebody figures it out and goes public with it from the journalism side. And that's when the company will suddenly address it with a statement and things like that. Same thing. The team does not owe anybody anything when it comes to something like this. A player being hurt is different.
I disagree. Like I said, they do owe us because our interest is the only thing that allows the league to be as successful as it is.
Right. They owe us once it actually affects. If it wasn't the offseason, this is something they needed to save right away. But it was the offseason. It potentially didn't affect the team and the product on the field whatsoever. Once they knew that it would, that's when they said something.
11 days later, and if training camp hadn't started, they probably still wouldn't have put something out, I would imagine.
Correct, and I'm okay with that from their perspective.
Not me, but that's okay. We can agree to disagree. 415 Faithful says, can we talk about Ricky's knee instead? We did earlier when the news broke. We talked all about it. If you're just joining us, 49ers have multiple injuries. Ricky Pearsall not practicing today because of that knee. It's the same knee with the PCL injury last year. The team is, quote, concerned. Surgery is not off the table. Malik Mustafa has a hamstring. He's not practicing. On the good side of things, we should say, Romello Hite, who scared the hell out of all of us yesterday, or 2 days ago when he was carted off the field, did appear to just have cramps. He is back out on the field. He's also apparently changed his number from 94 to 58, which I have to say is an upgrade. So way to go, Romello Hite. Season two off to a good start.
That's an interesting change because it's changing from a traditional defensive lineman number to a linebacker number.
Also, if we want to go in the good news department, Brock Purdy and his wife Jenna have announced that they have another child on the way. That's baby number two. So congratulations to the Purdys. That's some good news here. We can do good news and bad news on a Wednesday. So those are two good things. Hyde is back and Brock's family's getting bigger. Brock, can you have it be a boy this time so that we could maybe raise him to be a wide receiver and maybe we'll get a healthy receiver that way?
Yeah. Yeah, there's good news, there's bad news. There's a lot still to come. Hopefully not on the injury front.
Hopefully not. Thank you, everybody. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. As I always say, thank you to all our gold ticket members as well. We appreciate you. There's too many of you to put on the scroll. We appreciate it. I know I got to update that graphic because more of you have joined since I made it. I will do that, and I apologize for not doing it to this point. Please like this video, subscribe to the channel. We have a newsletter now, brand new, just started last week. It comes out every Saturday. It's a quick read. It is 100% free to sign up. It won't take you longer than 2 minutes, but it's just something to keep you updated on the week that was. And, of course, look ahead to the matchup that is to come once the games actually start. There's a link to sign up for it in the description. Just click the link. Again, it's 100% free. I promise I'm not going to do anything with your email addresses or anything like that. It's just a cool little thing to keep us basically on your radar screen over on Saturdays because we usually don't have a lot of content on Saturdays. So just wanted to add that to the offerings of the Gold Standard as well. Did you sign up, Levin?
No, I hear everything you have to say every single week.
I literally emailed you a sign up, an invite. Why didn't you sign up?
I don't remember getting that, honestly, but I don't even know what day it is anymore right now. So
when it's the company email, Levin checks it faster than I check. I can't even check it faster.
It comes through on my phone and I see it and I go, okay. And I can see the preview of the email. And usually it's a, okay, dismissed. That's not something I need to look at or read or anything. But when it's a more important one, then yeah, I click it.
So you just admitted that you get phone notifications for every email and you're actively ignoring the invite email. I see how it is.
No, it's called my personal email gets a ton of emails. So more get lost along the way. If multiple emails come in before I look, the older ones are not previewed. It's the most recent one previewed.
Come on, people aren't emailing you. You don't have that many friends.
It's not friends that are emailing me. That's for sure.
Well, I think that might just... Boy, you put that one on a tee for me. I don't even have to make the joke.
Email is not a way of communicating that I prefer, except for when it's in a professional manner.
Aha. All right. Well, check your emails on Saturdays for the newsletter if you sign up. Thank you, everybody, again. 100% free. Go and check it out. Thank you to all our YouTube channel members. Like this video. Subscribe to the channel. If your first time hopping on board was today, thank you very much. We're live every single weekday. We're live after all Niners games. You can also follow us anywhere your audio-only podcasts are found. We appreciate you. Thank you. Try to enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, everybody. We'll talk tomorrow.